Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. This week, science friction. Krista brings the case against her sister, Carrie. She says Carrie won't watch sci-fi because she's afraid of robots in the future, and she's missing out big time because of it. Should Carrie give sci-fi a chance? Only one man can decide. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman enters the courtroom.
It's true, Jesse. In a way, the seizure was actually a good thing. Let me get in there and take this new picture and look what I found. That's your bullet. See how it's lodged there in the pie hole ring? That's where all the major pie holes converge. And what's really fascinating is how it eroded this blood vessel here. In fact, it leaked. It was just the tiniest opening of the pie hole that caused your seizure. It's remarkable, really. Of course, if it happens again, we're talking major hemorrhage. Death within minutes, so you better swear them in.
Please rise and raise your right hands. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God or whatever?
I do.
Yes.
You swear to abide by Judge John Hodgman's ruling, despite the fact that he refers to sci-fi as scientifiction?
Yes.
I guess so.
Very well, Judge Hodgman.
Krista, Carrie, you may be seated for an immediate summary judgment in one of yours favors. Can either one of you name the piece of culture I was paraphrasing as I entered the courtroom? Carrie, you will not be able to because you hate science fiction.
I know, you're off the hook. God.
And Krista, Krista, I suspect you will not be able to either.
Well, that just makes me feel bad. I can take a guess.
Okay, you take a guess, but let me tell you why I'm fairly certain. A, it's incredibly esoteric, and B, and B, I have inside information. But go ahead,
okay.
take your guess. Go ahead.
Well, okay, I honestly have no idea. I'm going to say the Dead Zone.
Wrong.
Even though that has nothing to do with anything we're talking about.
Wrong. But I can understand why.
It's a good guess. I mean, yeah. It's a really solid guess. Like, if you're going to go, like, what are the sci-fi classics that you're going to go to? It's probably going to be either a quote from Terminator 2 or the Dead Zone.
No, but the Dead Zone, Christopher Walken plays a brain dude. You know what would have probably made more, like, he's a telepathic, right? Isn't he a clairvoyant?
Yes.
Right.
If he touches people.
If he touches people. And there's a shooting in that one as well. So the bullet lodged in the brain makes sense. And doesn't he have an accident and that's how he gets brain powers?
I think so. I honestly haven't seen the movie since.
We're doing a great reimagining of the Dead Zone franchise right now. But in fact, I was quoting
RoboCop.
No, in fact, I was going with the reimagining that rebooted reimagining, Battlestar Galactica.
Oh.
And I knew you wouldn't get it because A, you mentioned you've been watching it but haven't finished it, and it was from one of the final episodes. And B, it's also incredibly esoteric because it was from my cameo appearance on Battlestar Galactica in the episode No Exit, in which I played the brain surgeon Dr. Gerard, a role created and written for me by television legend Jane Espenson, who, as an expert on genre of all kind, that is to say fantasy and science fiction.
And westerns.
We'll find out because she's here right now as an expert witness to comment along with me and hear your case. Jane, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Jane Espenson, of course, I would argue came to worldwide internet and fandom prominence initially as a writer on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Would that be wrong, Jane?
That would not be wrong, Your Honor.
Would that have been your big break?
Yeah, that was my big break.
And then you and I met, just as you had begun writing for Battlestar Galactica, my favorite.
That's right.
My favorite. And then you went on to run Caprica, right? Isn't that correct?
I ran Caprica right into the ground.
Oh, unfair. Unfair to all culture that show is not still on. A brilliant show and worth a look-see, absolutely ahead of its time as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you.
Because the singularity and is happening next week. If we're happening, that show we're on now, it's a show about AI. If that show we're on now, kaboom,
That's right.
You'd get it on a week before the singularity. That would be great for sweeps. And then, and then now, and you have two. You have two jobs now that I believe are ongoing. And if not, you'll correct me. One is that you are a writer and producer on the television show Once Upon a Time.
That's right.
That is still ongoing, correct?
That is ongoing.
A major hit television program.
Mm-hmm. On ABC.
And then, in collaboration with a young man, whose name I'm remembering now is Cheeks Only, but he has an actual name, doesn't he?
Brad Bell.
Right. The creator of the huge hit web series Husbands.
That's right.
Which can be seen where?
CWSeed.com. It's the CW's digital arm, and it's Brad's show that I am also a writer on.
So it's Brad's. You call that Brad's show?
It's Brad and I created it together, but okay. It's his life, his vision, his world, and he's very much the showrunner. But boy, I'm proud of it.
And it's about two guys. It's a really funny, great show. One of the best and first good web series that was ever on. And
I think so. Thank you.
I also had a cameo appearance in it, but I had no lines. You learned your lesson from allowing me to be in Battlestar Galactica. Like, we can have him on, but let's make sure that he doesn't say anything.
Well, we didn't have any scripted lines for you, but you ad-libbed some that made the cut. So.
Oh, well, it was a delight, and that's a delightful show. It's about two dudes who are in love and accidentally get married while they're drunk in Vegas. So, Jane, I don't know if you've read the brief that's before this court, but the case is thus. Krista is a woman who has a sister named Carrie. Krista enjoys science fiction, and I think, Krista, I would not be wrong in saying with a bend towards the arc of the science fiction that you enjoy bends towards television and film.
Yeah, I enjoy books as well, but probably the stuff that I, ingest the most is TV and film.
Right. No one's going to go on a podcast and say they don't enjoy books. I get it. It's like on your resume, you always put hobbies, reading. I get it. And you're trying to get Carrie, your sister, older or younger sister?
Older.
Older sister, to enjoy science fiction with you. And she, for reasons of her own, probably having something to do with the fact that she loves making her younger sister's life miserable and has done since she was born, refuses not merely to take your recommendations for things to watch, but claims to hate science fiction. Is that incorrect, Carrie?
No, that's not incorrect.
All right, let's try to keep away from double negatives. All right, let's just plain, straightforward sentences, please. You are right. John Hodgman is something that it is always acceptable to say at any party or gathering.
Got it.
All right. So, Krista, how old are you two?
I'm 27.
And Carrie, you're 45?
Yes. That's correct. No,
you are right, John Hodgman. You're 29. Okay. And any other siblings in your family?
Nope.
Okay.
Just us.
And where do you live?
Krista? I'm in Chicago. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Krista, you're in Chicago. Carrie, where are you?
I'm in Washington, D.C., but we both grew up in Maryland.
Okay. All right. Very good. And what do you do with your life, Carrie?
I work for the government.
All right, and an unspecified. That's why you hate science. That's why you hate science fiction, because you see too much of it in real life.
Perhaps.
Yeah. You're working on cold storage of aliens.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I understand. Say no more. You work in D.C. in the Freemasonic laboratories, where George Washington is being cloned. Yeah. No, I understand. And Krista, you live in Chicago and you like science fiction, so I'm going to guess that you work part-time in a coffee shop and attend improv classes?
That's shockingly close. I actually am, I work at a call center and I take writing classes, but also improv.
Mm-hmm. All right, I gotcha. And what, and so you understand already what the dynamic here is. Kerry works for the United States government in an unspecified capacity, in a way that she felt very uncomfortable saying. So Krista, how long does this go back between you two?
Oh man, years, probably since we were really little. She was sort of into fantasy stuff when she was a really little kid. I'd say around the time I was like 9 or 10, I super started getting into a lot of different sci-fi stuff, and she very much was not.
And what was your favorite then, 9 and 10 years old? What was your gateway drug for you? Star Wars.
Star Wars was probably the gateway. Also, our uncle lived with us for a while, and he would have us watch Next Generation. So even though I probably didn't understand anything that was going on, I liked that show. I liked Patrick Stewart's voice a lot.
That's probably the most perfect way to start watching Star Trek The Next Generation. So, a weird uncle comes to live with you for a while. I'm sure you're not the first person to tell that story. Jane, did you write for The Next Generation? You did, didn't you?
I used to pitch stories there, and eventually one of them, I sold one story to them that never became an episode, but I did. I eventually sold them the premise that if you go too fast, you're in warp speed, you're tearing the time-space continuum. So it developed a whole thing that was all based on my idea. And so eventually in Voyager, they had to like invent a new kind of engine because of me.
Oh, because
oh, that's so cool. I was really into Voyager when I was in middle school.
There you go. I set the speed limit.
If you drive the spaceship too fast, mm-hmm. you smash the universe apart. Mm-hmm. You start a new timeline, and that's how J.J. Abrams was born.
Oh my God! I wonder if you could tie that back to me.
Do you think so? I think probably.
No, I don't think so. But how awesome!
Just let me ask you this, Jane. Girls, go talk amongst yourselves for a second. Does Star Trek The Next Generation exist in the Tommy Westfall universe?
I don't know.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, boy. You're going to get a lot of emails.
Oh, dear.
No, you're not. That's a very esoteric thing. You know what, folks? Stick around to the verdict, and I'll explain what I was talking about if you don't know. But there's no reason that you would necessarily know that unless you had spent as much time as me procrastinating in the internet. But you actually do things and write things, so...
Yeah.
All right, Krista, so your uncle got you into The Next Generation. That was a story that could have gone horribly wrong, but instead went horribly right.
Judge Hodgman, I hate to interrupt you, but according to my internet research, yes, Star Trek, including both the original series and the later series,
exist in
the Tommy Westfall universe. Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, Next Generation, and Voyager.
Well, they're all part of their universe. So if any one of them has touched the Westfall universe, then of course they are.
Sure.
All right. Well, we'll explain that later on. Krista, do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
Okay, good. Then you're a normal person no matter what you say for the rest of this podcast. That's good.
Okay, awesome.
What... and now, Carrie, you never were you around when Weird Uncle came to town with his bag full of video cassettes?
I was. We would have Monday night Star Trek and pizza with our uncle, and I was involved. And I think, you know, I didn't get into the show necessarily, but I enjoyed our uncle and pizza, so I was into it. You know.
Now. This may be slander, so I'm going to ask you to respond to this charge. Your sister has written to me in this brief that her attempts to get you to watch science fiction of any kind have been rebuffed so harshly that you ultimately have simply said you dislike anything. What was the... Hang on. I need to find the quote here. I apologize.
Anything with robots for the future.
Oh, well, you said it for yourself. Who is that speaking?
Krista.
Oh, that was Krista. Yeah. According to Krista, you have admitted to being so prejudiced that you hate, quote, the future and robots. Why do you hate robots? And as a follow-up, why do you hate the future?
Okay. I realize that I might sound close-minded when I talk about this, but or stupid. I fully accepted that I might be the losing one in this argument.
Well, not to worry. It won't reflect badly on the United States government. Whatever you say here. You're under immunity.
Well, you know, I think the thing is, I've been thinking about this a lot, and it's like any movie or book or anything that involves the future or robots, I just kind of instantly am turned off by. And, you know, I don't think that it's that I don't like concepts that are outside of reality. Like, I definitely enjoyed Lord of the Rings and other things like that. But I think it's that, you know, I feel stressed out enough by planet Earth and what we do here and kind of just dealing with people, and I'm fascinated by people. And so anything that kind of has to do with circumstances that, like, the future, my future, children might have to deal with is just extremely stressful for me to even think about.
You're saying it's contemplating the future stresses you out.
Yes, it does. It's like, you know, I enjoy some movies that are a little bit in the future. Like, I just read the book The Circle, and I thought that was interesting, but it's not so far in the future that it's like,
all right,
you have problems.
Apparently Dave Eggers is now buzz marketing on my podcast. How much did he pay you? How much did he pay? He probably didn't. You know what? The thing is, he probably didn't pay you a thing. I know better than anyone. Dave Eggers can get you to work for free.
Are you afraid of the future because looking at the future reminds you of the certainty of your own death?
I don't think that's it. I think it's more like, you know, if you think about daily life circumstances, there are enough stresses and interesting things going on. But say, like, we entered back into the food chain and we're suddenly like an alien can come out of nowhere and eat you. One, it's really hard for me to relate to something like that. And two, it's just, I don't want to add that to my list of things to have to, like, care about or worry about. So it's kind of, I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Well, you understand the alien jumping out and preying on you is a metaphor, right? Like, I don't think actually have to worry.
She's never seen aliens, so she wouldn't know.
So you don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
But your contempt for the future and robots is so strong that, according to your sister Krista, you disliked the movie Wall-E.
Yeah, that is true. And
you realize that puts you on the far fringes of society.
I think so. I mean,
it's possible that it makes you subhuman.
No. I'm not saying that. Maybe transhuman. Do you know what I mean? Maybe she's the next step of human evolution. She's so post nerd that she hates nerd things.
I'll take it. Sure.
Everything that has happened before and will happen again. Right, Jane?
Absolutely. And I mean, metaphor, you're exactly right, John. All these things are metaphorical. So they're all things you already have to worry about. They're just actually being safely encapsulated in robot bodies on the screen. So they should be less worrisome.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand. Actually, I can understand why, given the fact, you know, before I put words into your emotional mind, mouth, before I speak your emotions, you tell me your emotions. We are not telepathic. What about Wall-E do you dislike? And I would encourage you to describe the feeling of watching the movie.
Okay. Well, first of all, the beginning was extremely stressful and sad, where he's just kind of on this planet by himself. It's full of trash. He's alone. And then, like, also, he's made out of stuff, right? So it's kind of like this annoying thing where I was annoyed that I was so upset in the beginning, because it's like when you watch The Brave Little Toaster. At the end, you're like, why did I just cry about a toaster?
I was legitimately clearing my throat there. I have no strong feelings about The Brave Little Toaster.
Okay. Well, I think I'm a pretty empathetic person, and the beginning of it really made me feel sad, but I was frustrated that I felt sad for a robot when they're so, like, it just was stupid, I thought. And then
not even a robot, a moving picture of a robot.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and then the thing on the planet where like everybody's obese and on these little saucer things, I just, for some reason, it just really annoyed me. Like, I don't know. I didn't buy into the, like, the most human aspect of the movie was Wally, but he wasn't really real. And the whole set of circumstances just seemed absurd to me. And so I felt manipulated in the beginning by all these, like, alone scenes.
Can I interject here for a second?
I know, I have so much that I need to say, but go ahead, Jesse.
Wally isn't real?
Oh, no.
Oh, jeez.
Is your interjection complete, Jesse?
Judge Hodgman, is that true? Is Wally not real?
Wally, all right, Jesse, you're old enough to know this now. Wally is real in the same way the characters that we love the most from novels and books and TV shows and movies are real. He doesn't actually exist, but he's real in our hearts.
The characters I love from books, television, and movie are literally real here in the real world.
Yeah, that's because you only read books about living baseball players.
Point taken.
I think I got that one right, too.
Yeah.
But the thing that I loved so much about what you were saying, Carrie, and I mean it, is when you said, and then it turns out the most human one of them all is the robot. And it's like, yeah, that's the point of the movie. That's the thing. That is the point of science fiction, to make you think that. Do you know what I mean? Like make you turn, like one of the points of science fiction, I dare say, Jane, and you can jump in if I'm wrong, is to make you look at a familiar thing in a defamiliarized way and think, oh, now I'm looking at myself in a different way. Now I'm looking at society in a different way. You know, that's the big picture of science fiction. What you said, the thing about Wally is the most human one of them all was the robot, is the thing the science fiction fan says in gasping awe and admiration. But you said it in derision, like, do you know what? Not even because it was hack, because that's kind of a hacky sort of trope. But you said, like, I can't believe you got tricked into caring about that robot. I thought your problem with it was going to be the fact that it opens on a bleak future wasteland in which all humans except the fat ones have died. Do you know that we've ruined the planet?
Well, I mean,
planet.
I wasn't a fan of that part either, but
I was a huge fan of it. Jane, what do you take away from Carrie's assessment of Wally? Have you seen the movie?
Oh yeah, I've seen it. Of course, love it. Yeah. Like all right thinking people. I wonder that when she says, "I think I'm an empathetic person," I think she's a very empathetic person, and that's what's bothering her. Mm-hmm. Is that she's troubled by the amount of empathy that she's feeling, and you know, if you could get past the like, if you really embrace the idea that this robot has been written as a robot in order to make a point, not because the writers are missing a point about the value of humanity, but because they're making a point about the humanity as a value that should be treasured no matter where we find it, maybe that will help you get past that jump and you'll let yourself feel your natural empathy for the robot.
Mm. Carrie, what do you like to consume, culturally speaking? What is your favorite? Have you seen a movie besides Wally? Maybe one you like?
Yes. My sister is going to probably chime in and make fun of me because
no she's not allowed. I will have order here, Krista.
Sorry.
You interrupted me saying she's not allowed to interrupt you, Carrie.
Sorry.
No one, Krista, I order you to silence until I say you can speak again. Carrie, this is a safe space. What's your favorite? Okay. What's your favorite movie? Showa.
All right. I jotted down a list of movies that I did enjoy. I'm not going to say this is like the full list, but I like Goodfellas. I like Amelie. I like Good Will Hunting. I really liked Inglourious Basterds. I don't know. I like movies that are more.
Are you talking about the alternate history movie, Inglourious Basterds?
Yeah.
I think that was written by Harry Turtledove, wasn't it? The alternate timeline universe movie, the science fiction movie Inglourious Basterds.
I don't mind things about the past that kind of...
being altered.
Yeah.
Right.
I like Ancient Aliens. That's the thing, is that I don't know. I mean...
Whoa. Hang on. You just blew my mind. That's a pretty deep cut. How do you like Ancient Aliens?
Well, because I don't think that any of that actually happened, so it doesn't stress me out. It's like,
what are you talking when you but when you are talking about, when you say the words "I like Ancient Aliens," what does that mean to you? What does that signify to you? What are you referring to?
I'm referring to the show.
Oh, I don't know this. There's a show that I don't know. What's that?
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. It's on the History Channel. And
it's the worst.
I think it's
hilarious. Wait a minute. Was that was Krista? That was you talking?
Sorry. Yes.
All right. That's fine. No, I want to have this counterbalance so people realize that we are not being paid by History Channel to talk about Ancient Aliens. Awful. Jane, are you familiar with this show?
I know of it. And yeah, it's one of those things where the channels that have names like History, Discovery, and Learning have branched out into pseudoscientific nonsensey blathery stuff where they're entertaining sort of the Chariots of the Gods type pseudoscientific Bigfoots. Maybe Bigfoot's real. Maybe there are ghosts. Maybe there were aliens who visited Earth in ancient times.
But I agree, pawn shops. Pawn shops, right. And storage containers.
But it sounds like she's watching it ironically.
Well, let's find out. Tell me about Ancient Aliens. What is the premise?
Well, it's kind of like
two brothers in Toronto. One is a realtor. One's a contractor.
Exactly. I mean,
show three people, three different ancient alien tombs. No, tell me what it is.
Well, it's kind of, I definitely watch it ironically. It's kind of like if the last most recent Indiana Jones movie with the aliens at the end were turned into a historical show. Like, it's all about different points in history and how aliens intervened. And I just think it's hilarious. The most recent one I watched was about Nazi Germany and how it was all the aliens and it's just, to me, I don't buy any of it.
It spins theories.
Exactly.
It's not dramatized.
No.
No. Mm-hmm.
They have experts, too, who are totally
that
crazy.
That is probably the best part of
I'm
the
sure
show,
they do.
Are the experts.
How do I get that job? Krista, now you may speak. What are the experts like on this show?
Well... one of them, which is probably my favorite from the times that I've been forced to watch it, is this one guy who he kind of has the like sleepy eyes and crazy wild man hair. And he just sort of rambles about aliens. He's become a meme, actually, online where it's just him with his crazy face and it says "because aliens" on it.
But it's not Lauren Coleman, right? My friend who runs the Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine.
No, I don't think so.
I bet he's been on that show though, right? He's certainly been on. He must be. I'll tell you. If he's not getting his due. Everybody, Cryptozoology Museum in Maine is a great thing. Lauren Coleman is one of the Bigfoot experts of the world, the best, most renowned Fortean investigators of the Sasquatch phenomenon. He authored the biography on Tom Slick, Yeti Hunter, a real person. Look into it. But if you're talking, if I go back to this Ancient Aliens and find out you're making fun of my internet friend, Lauren Coleman, you're going to be in trouble, Krista.
This "because aliens" guy is off the hook. I just Googled him. This guy is madness. This guy has like moose. His hair's not just unruly. It appears to have had moose applied to it to extend it outwards.
Do you think it's secretly the Yeti who's shaved his face to appear human?
He looks at most like he's 35-ish years old. I imagined a 57-year-old when you described that. This guy looks like a guy that would be wearing a poncho, like the woven kind of poncho, outside of a marijuana dispensary, asking people to go in there and score him some weed.
Krista, yeah. You've watched this show because Carrie suggested it to you?
Or if I'm staying at her place, she wants to watch it.
She wants to watch it. How many hours would you say you've logged watching Ancient Aliens?
I mean, probably be not that many for Ancient Aliens. I've watched more of the other shows she watches that are awful.
Like, what other shows does she watch that are awful?
Basically the entire lineup of Bravo and E.
Look, you know what? I'm not going to let you trash all those shows. Those are hardworking people.
Not all of them are terrible, but all the Real Housewives shows.
But Ancient Aliens is the only one that verges on science fiction that she's into.
I would say, yeah.
Yeah. And how many hours of Ancient Aliens, how many episodes of Ancient Aliens have you watched at her house?
Probably not that many.
I'm asking you for a number.
For a number?
Yeah. Do an estimate. Three. All right.
Three.
So that's about 60 minutes of Ancient Aliens.
Yeah. No, they're hour long shows.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Good. So, Jane.
42 minutes in an hour on a standard broadcast is.
Thank you.
If you wanted to do the math.
And, well, I don't. So could you multiply that by three for me, please?
About 2 hours.
About roughly 2 hours. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay. Roughly 2 hours. I got you. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, Krista, is your contention that Carrie is prejudiced against science fiction or just has terrible taste in general?
I actually don't think she has terrible taste, which is what
it sounds like.
She does. Well, I mean, I'm a strong believer in there are no guilty pleasures. Like, if you like something, whatever.
That is emblazoned on the seal of this court.
Yeah.
Cinderin.
I probably have some taste that she finds questionable, but. The good things that she likes, I also think are good.
Yeah, Goodfellas is a good movie.
Yeah. And, you know, Inglourious Basterds, I love that movie too. Mm-hmm. It's just whenever we encounter something sci-fi associated, she just really, unless it's Ancient Aliens, completely rejects it. I mean, when I was trying to watch Lost when it was in syndication, it was constant harassment for every episode when we lived together.
Carrie, you were harassing Krista for watching Lost?
Yeah.
Why?
She hates time travel.
That's not the only reason. So,
Jane, you didn't write for Lost, did you? I can't remember.
I didn't, but my bosses who created Once Upon a Time were writers on Lost and were very much involved in the crafting of that show.
And what about, were they time travel people or not time travel people?
My bosses have a very specific view of time travel that that you have to have that kind where you can't cause a new timeline where when something happens, you have to determine that it always happened that way. So that we have a lot of discussions about time travel in the room and how it would work and whether it would work. And it's always fascinating, and I think Carrie would find it terribly boring.
She hates it when I talk about it.
Carrie,
Back to the Future, but
everyone likes Back to the Future.
Yeah. Back to the Future is not time travel.
No, I'm saying it's not time travel that I hate.
I gotcha.
Oh, okay. So what was it that you hated about Lost?
I don't want to offend anyone, but I felt
this is a safe space.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I felt like everything about the show, and it went on for so long, I was friends with a lot of people that were into it. I've seen a bunch of the episodes. Like, it seemed as though there was no real planned map of where the show was going.
How dare you?
And it seemed like, you know, anything could happen in this lawless kind of universe that they were in. And so it just didn't feel that creative to me. It just was like, oh, what happened now? Like a giant thing just came through and wiped everybody out. I didn't really find it very compelling.
You sound like a true nerd.
Didn't find it grounded, it sounds like.
So explain, Jane, what you mean by that.
that it felt untethered to her, that there's a sense where if you put no limits on your storytelling at all and you can just have anything happen, you get deus ex machinas and you get, you know, the twist that doesn't. And I think that's what it sounds like she's reacting to. And maybe that's her fear of all sci-fi, is that, like, well, anything's possible in a world where you can make a robot that thinks, then you could just have any sort of plot turn and nothing's going to be what we call earned, where, you know, you've laid the groundwork where the twist will feel surprising and inevitable.
Well, which is true about any story. I mean, mm-hmm. no matter what world it's set in, because truly, I mean, you know, the world of Goodfellas is a alternate universe too. I mean, that's set mm-hmm. in a real place and purports to be a real oral history of one guy's experience of the New York City organized crime at a certain time period. But it's made up, you know, it's fake.
Right. And if an angel suddenly flew into that story, it would feel totally ungrounded, unmotivated, and random. And I think maybe that's why she's talking about feeling anxious.
I may be the only person, though, in the culture who believes Ray Liotta is my special angel. Sorry, Jane, I interrupted you.
Just that may be why she keeps using the word anxiety or talking about feeling anxious, that you do get that feeling if you feel like the story could just randomly go anywhere. And maybe that's what's causing it, is sort of that she doesn't see, if you aren't grasping onto the metaphor, then it'll feel like just random things are happening in science fiction. Where if you've really grasped onto what the writers are how they are using these formula, or how they're using these things like robots, then it could feel random.
And may I stipulate that I loved Lost and currently still love Lost, and I suspect in the future, if I were to travel forward, I would always love Lost, even when I am a robot on a wasteland, my mind being in put in there by my gay husband. But what you are saying about Lost is certainly not unknown to the internet. I mean, even George R. R. Martin has expressed some of the concerns that you did with the way that show moved on. And that has a lot to do, in my understanding, with just how TV shows are made, and how you know, you just have to keep going. Even, you know, one of the bold things that Lost did, not to everyone's satisfaction, but it ended, you know, and it's hard to remember what a strange thing it was for a huge show to say, we are going to put an end point on this so that we can tell a story. And that was a you know, going back now, lots of shows do those kinds of arcs and conclusions. But at the time, it was totally revolutionary. And I think that show was revolutionary in a lot of different ways. I have a whole theory, Jane. Now, ladies, mm-hmm. you can talk amongst yourselves. To me, the thing about Lost that was so, mm-hmm. Aside from the fact that I thought some of the writing, almost all of the writing was amazing. Some of the storylines were amazing. The characters were amazing. The actors, I loved it. The look, the feel, it was constantly challenging. One season, like, I liked the fact that, like, one season would be about this, and then another season would be about time travel, and it's this really hard time travel that those guys, I don't know who your bosses are, they're both guys.
Yeah, Eddie and Adam.
Right.
Yeah.
That they had special rules for it. But also, mm-hmm. there always seemed to be such tension. This is one of the first big, major network shows to be this involved in nerdery of a high kind, time travel mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. alternate universes and alternate timelines and all of this stuff that had always been relegated to some weird uncle's bag of video cassettes previously was now front and center mainstream hit. And of course, what made the show so enchanting or addictive, frankly, was the ambiguity about whether it was going to be science or whether it was going to be supernatural of some kind, or a kind of supernatural science. And that was a game they could only play for so long. And it felt like there was always pressure to push it into, can we just make this a soap opera? Can we make this the jockiest kind of show of all kind? Or can we make this the nerdiest? While others were saying, no, let's make it the nerdiest kind of show of all kind. Can we make this a world in which we can reboot each character where there is no continuity issue whatsoever? We can just have the character do something that's completely new and different and forget everything we did before, like on those crazy soap operas from the 80s? Or do we have to, like, really double down on canon here and make sure that we follow through on every premise that we did? And that tension alone, that was, like, to me, and it could be completely my layering on of my own neuroses and anxieties onto this show, but feeling that tension between jock culture and nerd culture in popular entertainment was fascinating to me. Jane, do you have any comment?
Yes, I do, because I think you're actually at something huge and amazing and interesting and transformative about this very podcast, which is that the pressure that you're feeling from network television to move things away from genre is exactly the thing I think that Carrie is feeling. The networks are like Carrie in that they sense that, or they have this fear that sci-fi is somehow going to turn into 1950s paper plate flying saucers and ray guns, and everything will become ungrounded and crazy and weird and nerdy
to that point, Jane, network.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interject, but since you mentioned 1950s sci-fi, would you like to hear me whistle and hum at the same time to make a UFO sound?
Yes.
I actually tried to do a tune there. That's not right. I should just be like.
It's really fun because when I look out the window here, I can see the sound engineer wincing and grabbing her head.
Yay. Sorry, but you were on to a really great point, and I apologize. So network executives are terrified that they have an idea that it's all going to spin off into gourd must eat humans now or whatever.
Yes. I am Flindor, son of Grindor. There's this fear of sci-fi, even though in motion pictures, it's obviously they're the biggest hits of every single year are sci-fi. But somehow on television, there is this fear that sci-fi is crazy, weird, random robots. And I think that may, and it's interesting, if we can cure Carrie today and then apply that cure to the networks, we could institute a new golden age of television science fiction.
I know, but maybe their fear is absolutely merited because there are Carries out there in the world who just don't dig it.
Well, that's a good point. But again, if we cure Carrie and therefore can cure all those other people, we'll still drum in a new golden age of television science fiction.
What's wrong with Grindor, son of Flindor?
That's fantasy.
Would you rather see a different Grindor?
That's
not one of the Flindor Grindors?
That's fantasy. That's not science fiction.
It is fantasy.
Fiction.
That's true.
Just like Star Wars, not science fiction, fantasy. Happened a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It is not. Hodgman, I think it's a space opera.
No, it is not. It is George Lucas's interpretation of The Lord of the Rings, but that's another story. Or a trilogy. Carrie, I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions. It is not the purpose of this court to change your taste using a taste changing implant or post hypnotic suggestion like Jane Espenson is suggesting. I will spare you that treatment, though it is available to you if you wish. The machine is ready. But I will ask just a couple of questions. Do you consider all science fiction with the same open derision that you consider ancient aliens? Do you think it's for nerds?
No, I don't think that's what it's about. It's not that I am, you know, worried if I watch science fiction that I'll be nerdy. If I was worried about what my taste would be, I wouldn't watch Real Housewives or things like that. Like, I don't take it that seriously. I think part of it, aside from all of the things that bother me about plot lines, is just there are people out there who... the thought of being in outer space or the future, it's just the vastness of it and the things that you don't know are not fun to think about. So I think, you know, aside from the things that we've been talking about, there probably are other people like me who just don't like to think about being in outer space. If I had the option, I would never go to outer space. Like, it's not something that I'm into.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up.
I still want to know what branch of the government you work for where you think it's actually an option for you to go to outer space. Because that might be true.
For the record, I don't really want to go into outer space either. Just for your information, Gary. I don't know if you know that. I find the thought of being in space terrifying.
So, Krista, this is your chance to make your argument, right?
Yeah.
Why should Carrie change her mind about things that clearly make her anxious and uncomfortable?
Because I think she's focusing on the wrong thing in a lot of cases, or she's getting caught up in these smaller details. Maybe that's what it seems like the pieces of fiction are all about. But the pieces of sci-fi that I like the most are about the people. And I know that people-driven, character-driven stuff is what she's really into. And I think that, you know, sci-fi offers this really interesting way to sort of cast a light on human relationships and the relationships to the world around them. And I think if she were to give it a chance and maybe watch some of the things that I'm very familiar with her taste, grew up with her. So I know the types of things she might be into. So I think maybe if she were to watch some of the things that I pick for her, that she would then see the merit to sci-fi and possibly
so what are you
a
what
little
are you,
bit
what are the what are your favorite things
well,
that
I
you would
you
that
say,
you would want to share with her?
You don't consider it sci-fi, but she's never seen the original Star Wars trilogy, which I think is a good jumping off point for a lot of people for sci-fi.
Will you hang on a second, Krista? Carrie?
Yes.
You did say that you had seen some Star Wars.
I've seen the most. I mean,
she's seen the Phantom Menace.
Krista,
sorry.
Don't try to help her out of this. Carrie,
there is a general problem. Sorry.
I'm going to ask you a direct question.
Okay.
How many Star Wars branded feature films have you seen?
One.
What was the name of it?
I don't remember. But
stop dodging the question.
It was when the new ones came into theaters. It was mm-hmm. the first what was one the, when they what, redid everything.
What happened in the movie?
Honestly, we took some people. We were babysitting, and I fell asleep during it. So I didn't. I don't even remember. I know it was like a young Luke Skywalker, or young a young Darth Vader. Sorry. I really don't know anything about it.
Sort of floppy racist caricature in it?
Yeah, I remember that part.
Description of that movie is uncanny because it is the same description someone would give it if they hadn't fallen asleep in the movie. I don't really know what happened in it. Jane, have you seen the I mean, you must have, because Damon Lindelof, the co-creator of Lost and a friend of the show and the world. He was sending around that YouTube video by that fella. We got to put a link on it. I can't think of it right now. About
the Red Letter Media.
Yes. Was
yes,
that Krista
amazing.
Talking?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Mr. Plinkett review.
Yeah. Could you say what that was, Krista?
It's a really long review where this team, they're called Red Letter Media, but this one character that they have breaks down everything that was wrong with every single one of the prequel movies. And
but specifically the Phantom Menace.
Specifically the Phantom Menace, because that's probably the one that's the most problematic, to put it diplomatically.
And basically the part that really struck me, Jane, did you see this video?
Yes, and I think I know exactly what you're about to say. It's about describing the characters without using what they're wearing.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, I think maybe you've seen it more recently than I have, but my memory of it is essentially, yeah, describe the characters and describe what happens in Star Wars, what is now called A New Hope, and everyone's like, well, this happens. And then in Phantom Menace, people are like, I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. who is this? Like, people say, you know, who is Han Solo?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You're brash and you know, unapologetic and rebel.
Lovable rogue who comes around, you know, who seems to have no principles, but comes mm-hmm. around to having mm-hmm. principles at the end. Who's Qui-Gon Jinn?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, we're not really sure. What,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember. Well, I made Carrie go see that because I was 12 at the time. And I remember watching it and thinking distinctly, like, oh, I'm probably too young to understand the stuff that's going on. And then seeing it again later and realizing it, that it was actually supposed to be geared towards children, and then just being so disillusioned by that.
But it is, you know, but I have children, and my son, that's the one that my son has seen the most. Because
really?
Because the child is in it, you know, that's why, because it's him. He sees himself in it. But we're not all 12-year-old boys. That was, I think, the miscalculation of that film. We're not all Caucasian 12-year-old boys who can precisely put themselves inside that precise pod racing pod.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, we went down that. We went down a little bit of a sideways rat hole, as Marlon Mann would say. You want her to see Star Wars: A New Hope. What else?
Yes. Preferably, I'd like her to watch all three because I think she would actually like them. I'd really like her to watch Firefly because that's so much about human relationships that the sci-fi element is almost secondary a lot of times.
That's a Western film. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Space Western. I'd like her to watch selected episodes of Doctor Who, which I know.
Has she seen Blink?
No. Have you watched an entire episode, Carrie?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. Show her Blink of the more recent seasons. I'd like her to watch the Vincent Van Gogh episode because I think that episode is beautiful. I don't know. There's a bunch of them that I'd like for her to see, but I'd try to pick a few. And then if she likes it, maybe start from the beginning of the reboot anyway.
Neil Gaiman has said that if someone who's never seen Doctor Who should watch Blink.
Yeah.
And I will say if the person gets it, then they're going to get Doctor Who. And if they don't get it, you should not bother.
Use Torchwood as an entryway to Doctor Who, too.
Oh, that's a good suggestion, yeah. Jane. But here's the thing. This is what I want you to say, Krista, as we wrap up this portion of the case. This is your chance now. You have to pick one thing, right, that you would order me to order her to watch that is going to not merely act as the gateway drug into whatever, but would express in a sisterly, collegial way, hopefully to her, what it is that you love about sci-fi. So what is the one thing and why do you love it as science fiction?
I might have to go with Moon.
Oh, interesting call.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's Sam Rockwell, who's amazing. Mm-hmm. And what's David Bowie's son's actual name now?
Duncan Jones, yeah.
I think the direction of it is really good. I mean, I think it's definitely it's a sci-fi movie, very much so, but it's so much about that one person. And I think if I'm picking one thing, I mean, I'm counting out seasons of TV, but if it's one thing, then probably that movie.
Wow. What do you think about that, Jane?
I was so in my own head of trying to justify all the ways in which Galaxy Quest would be the perfect answer to this question. And I'm still grappling with
Carrie, have you seen Galaxy Quest? I couldn't remember.
No.
Oh.
It might be good because you'll be able to laugh along with all the things where it pokes fun at sci-fi. And then at the same time, when you realize the heart and what these people have gained from playing sci-fi characters, it may also like move in that direction, too.
I had actually thought that she had seen that when we were kids, but apparently she didn't have the same childhood I did. So,
forgetting about how Moon will initiate Carrie into your obsession, can you just speak personally about why you love Moon so much, that is the one thing you would share? If you were going to be sent onto a space station with your sister and you could only take one science fiction movie with you, that would be not even a movie, science fiction piece of culture. What is it about Moon?
That wouldn't be a great thing to watch while you're stuck on a space station, no problem. But
all right, let's say you're on vacation in the Shire. You're in a you've got a little Airbnb of a hobbit hole in the Shire, and you've only got one DVD with you.
Okay. And I do have to say, if I'm going comedy, then definitely Galaxy Quest. But for Moon, I just found the whole premise was just so impactful to me. Just it had a heaviness to it, but it didn't feel heavy-handed. This is a really like lame way to describe it. But I just kept thinking about it afterwards and the way this guy just had to deal with being in this situation that on one hand was totally not familiar because, you know, I don't want to give too much away with spoilers.
But Krista, I have to All right. I know there is a big spoiler in the film.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to spoil it. But I have to stop you there because what you're describing now is any movie.
I know.
Regardless of genre. Regardless of genre. Do you know? And I think that that is in some ways your point, right? Mm-hmm. Which is that there are great stories that can be told in a science fiction context that are the same as any other, as any movie that might be on Carrie's existing list. So you're not making the case for science fiction.
I know. Well, okay.
One last chance. Forget about Moon. Forget about everything else.
Okay.
Make your case briefly, because I am already on my hover chair into my chambers.
Okay. Well, on a superficial level, I do think it's cool. I think, you know, futuristic stuff is very interesting. But I definitely think that these weird situations, like being stuck on a spaceship by yourself, it really brings out an element in people that you wouldn't see normally, but it's definitely an element that's always there. And I think putting people into extraordinary circumstances really sort of brings out the human elements in them.
Sure.
And it can really create stress on relationships. You know, it's like being stranded, essentially, but in a more fantastical sense. So I just really like that it sort of brings out this very raw part of people. Mm-hmm. And also, I appreciate what makes me feel about humanity in a good way, like especially Doctor Who, because it makes you feel like there's so many possibilities for us as a species. And that's what I love most about that show. And mm-hmm. It doesn't make me feel anxious about the future. It makes me feel such hope for it that we could get to this place where this random crazy alien cares so much about us. And just seeing us spread throughout the universe and be able to overcome some basic things like in Star Trek, like hunger issues.
I'm going to stop you there. No. I got you. I think I'm tuned into something now. I was seriously going to interrupt you, though, because if you're like, I really just like to see people in awful situations. I'm like, have you seen Hardcore Pawn on the True Channel? You know, it doesn't need to be sci-fi. People push to their limits.
That's the point. I don't even think sci-fi is a genre. Sci-fi is a setting, and the metaphor you lay over it determines whether it's sci-fi or not. But Battlestar Galactica could be on an actual aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
And you're right. It just gives you a way to put people in more stressful situations than you could without the metaphor, thereby bringing forward their humanity.
Yeah. The reason that Battlestar Galactica was set on a space aircraft carrier rather than an actual aircraft carrier was that it had a name recognition, so that's how you're going to sell a show, and B, that was the only doing it in space was the only way you could talk about war in a real way in mm-hmm. 2003 and 2004 when we were in the middle of a huge national anxiety about what we were doing in the Middle East and how we were responding to terrorism. The science fiction setting allowed Ron Moore and Jane and the other writers and David Icke to tell and explore those stories in a way that they simply would not be allowed to in a real world setting, which is another argument for science fiction that I'm glad, Jane, you and I are here to make, because Krista just likes people on moon bases. She likes Sam Rockwell and Sam Rockwell.
Who
and
doesn't
cute
like Sam Rockwell?
Carrie, before I go into my ready room, you have beef with Doctor Who?
Do I, Carrie?
Yeah, Carrie.
No,
you don't like Doctor Who?
I don't have enough information. I haven't watched enough shows to have any beef with it. I don't.
Data incomplete. Data incomplete.
Exactly.
You don't have a chip on your shoulder about Doctor Who. You say you watched part of one. Did you fall asleep?
Yeah, I mean, Krista and I lived together before, and I've seen it. I haven't sat and actively watched it, so I don't think that I've. You know, I don't really have an opinion about it.
And you don't, and you're okay with time travel or no?
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
Right. It's not like with a discomfort, like a gut level discomfort level where 10, like worst 10 is Wally. Like, get me out of here. And zero is the Steadicam tracking shot from Goodfellas that all humans love, where he goes into the nightclub, giving everybody $100 bills. My aspiration for life. Where are you with time travel? Where does time travel on the gut level disgustometer?
I'll put it at a 4.
All right. I think I've heard everything I need to hear. I'm going to go into my ready room now. I will be back in a moment with my decision.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Carrie, how are you feeling right now?
All right. This conversation made me feel a little bit differently about looking at science fiction. So I thought it was interesting. I hope I didn't come across as too closed-minded, but
in what way did it make you feel differently about science fiction?
Well, I hadn't thought, I've always kind of viewed the premises as so outside of reality that it was hard for me to relate to the characters, but I hadn't thought about it in a way that, you know, these premises kind of push you to think about how humans would be. I never really thought about it that way for some reason. I just kind of always felt disconnected from it. But I thought that was an interesting aspect that, you know, made me more open-minded, I guess I would say.
I don't know if you've ever read Moby Dick, but I don't think anybody really cares that much about catching one particular whale.
Okay.
Krista, how are you feeling?
Okay. I feel like I kind of rambled a bit and didn't express myself that well, but...
No, I think you did great.
Thanks.
It's because you're on her team, Jane.
It's true. But
you're helping team up on her sister.
Yeah, and I was mostly trying to put things into terms that I thought Carrie would get more than I thought maybe like a hard sci-fi fan would get. But yeah.
Jane, why do you think that people should watch Galaxy Quest, the roughly 3-star mid to late 1990s?
Oh, no, it's brilliant. Galaxy Quest is one of the best movies ever made. It is 5-star.
You're listening to Judge John Hodgman. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. Of course, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, always brought to you by you, the members of MaximumFun.org. Thanks to everybody who's gone to MaximumFun.org/join, and you can join them by going to MaximumFun.org/join.
If I ever saw one. It's brilliant. It's insightful in so many ways. It talks about the experience of fiction, of being a part of something, feeling like you're not a part of something, about fandom, about sci-fi as seen from the outside and seen from the inside. It's a lovely, lovely motion picture and hysterically funny. People should definitely see Galaxy Quest. And particularly if you don't like sci-fi, I think it's a good one where it objectively holds sci-fi up at a distance and at the same time that it has this great love of it.
It's very like irreverent about sci-fi, mm-hmm. but at the same time, cares about it deeply. Yeah.
I feel a little disappointed that nobody brought up my favorite sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Babe, Pig in the City.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely.
It's a dystopia, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what Judge John Hodgman has to say about all this when we come back in just a minute. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom.
Oh, my hover chair broke again.
That chair, it can hum and whistle at the same time.
I know, that has nothing to do with its operation as a hovering chair. Well, I was listening in from my ready room to say what I needed to say, and I have to correct 2 points right away. Galaxy Quest is a great movie, and I am offended that you would say what you said, Jesse.
It was a 3-star movie.
I order you.
I enjoyed Galaxy Quest. I have no problem with Galaxy Quest.
I order you to revisit it. There's a lot more going on there, and a breakout performance by Justin Long, my friend.
That's right.
As the chief nerd, and it also has Sam Rockwell in it, Krista's favorite.
Yep.
It's a great movie. I'm not sure that I agree with Jane that that should be the one that Carrie should watch if I were to order in her favor. But before I come to that conclusion, let me correct another point that I overheard through the sliding door of my ready room, which was Jane saying to Krista, "You did a great job." You know what, Krista? You didn't. I'm sorry. I got to call them as I seized them with my hairband visor, like Geordi LaForge. I can see things that Jane can't.
Okay.
And what I saw was not that you did a bad job explaining the merits of science fiction, because you're not a true fan or that you're not intelligent to. You're both of those things, clearly. It's just that you're in the inside. You know what I mean? You're in the inside. Yeah. You love it too. You just love it. You love it in a way that's gut level. I just dig it. And I don't think that you have the part in you necessarily, or it's not developed yet, the part in you that is broken, the way I am broken and the way Jane is broken. And then we got to think about why things work all the time. And they are able to, and then feel compelled without being asked to articulate why a story works and why science fiction works and why science fiction is important and all that stuff. Because you just enjoy what you enjoy, which is, you know, part of the seal of this court. You know, as I say, people like what they like. And that is something that this court honors. So I hesitated to even hear this case because I don't like to try to force taste onto other people. But this was a good chance to talk about some science fiction that I like. And also, there have been times in this case, I'll reference Gavel Banger's Ball with a guest witness, John Darnielle, where I forced a woman to listen to heavy metal because her boyfriend loved it so much. And I would say in this case, I will find in your favor and order Carrie to give some science fiction a try. Now, Carrie, I intended to bury the lead a lot deeper than that. I was putting the lead in Pellucidar at the center of the earth. We would not have found that lead for another 3 hours. But I've tipped my hand, as I think you knew that it would be tipped. But Carrie, I want to say something. I appreciate why you don't like WALL-E. And I appreciate why you don't like science fiction, or at least what you think are some of the hallmarks of science fiction. And that is that you just have, on a gut level, an anxiety about them. You don't want to go into space. You might have a fantasy about going to a beautiful Middle Earth type place, or you might not. But you know, when you see a robot hard scrabbling across what once was a thriving city, that makes you feel uncomfortable and unhappy, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Right. And you know what? We don't turn on the TV or watch a movie, right? Specifically to feel unhappy, right? Now,
yeah.
And in the same way, I can't go on any of the underwater rides at Disneyland or Disney World because robots underwater I can't handle it. just even saying robots underwater just made me feel sick to my stomach. There is a basic gut reaction to certain things that you have that you kind of can't control, and you know you shouldn't have to go through immersion therapy to get out of unless it's like an OCD issue that's keeping you from leaving your house. Do you know what I mean? You live a completely functional life and a happy one, watching your terrible television and working for the government.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel no compulsion whatsoever to force you to endure something that you just can't like. But I will say this: you're watching a lot of garbage. If Krista is reporting truly, I mean, you like some good movies, but I noticed that all of those movies came out before the year 2000. And meanwhile, most of your time is you're watching Real Housewives and Ancient Aliens. And I love those shows. I hope everyone in the world got the very deep reference I made to Property Brothers earlier in the program, which is a HGTV show starring the Property Brothers. They're Property Brothers. And the show sells itself. And I love those shows, right? Because they I really have a fondness for that kind of reality shows of that kind, because they are they're repeatable. Every time you turn on, there's drama, right? But every time you turn on those shows, you know exactly how that's going to unfold, right? That's why police procedurals are so popular among such a wide group of people, particularly, I'm not going to generalize about old people, but there is something comforting about seeing people's brains splattered all over the wall week over week over week. And it's not the brain splattering. It is the chaos that is then resolved into order in exactly the same way with people that you like week over week over week. They are those shows, that entertainment, that culture is profoundly unchallenging, right? It is not putting you into it is so within your comfort zone that it is like a duvet that you're surrounding yourself with. And that's great too, right? But between those poles, right? And we're not even talking about genre anymore. We're just talking about culture. Between the poles of challenging and unchallenging, there's a lot of stuff and a lot of worthwhile stuff. And the reality is, and I think you probably have a pretty varied cultural diet, but I hope you do in any case, because it's important to have a varied cultural diet, to have those things in your life that you can just veg out to in the middle of the night after you've done six comedy shows in total terror at the Public Theater for a week, and your rap party is sitting at home by yourself with a tuna fish sandwich and a martini watching Property Brothers, the greatest night of my life, by the way. My favorite night of all time. I wish I could recreate it every night, being done that show and just watching the... Right? But of course, there are times when you got to enjoy culture that makes you... a little bit uncomfortable. I don't want to say makes you think, because it's a cliche, and it's particularly a cliche of science fiction. But I think that challenges you a little bit. That gives you something that you don't expect, and maybe makes you a little uncomfortable till you come around and to an end where you feel comfortable again. I mean, that's CSI basically, right? But with bigger themes. So for that reason, I feel that you have a prejudice against science fiction now, because your sister's been pushing it on you for so long in such a completely inarticulate manner that that you just automatically say no. In the same way that Jonathan Colton had been recommending that I read Neal Stephenson novels for a decade. And the more he recommended it, the more I said no. The more I hated Neal Stephenson and his work, because the recommendation often breeds contempt. Do you know what I mean? But yeah. Then finally I broke down and I'm like, oh, I really enjoy this. It's challenging to me and I love it. So first of all, you have to read Reamde by Neal Stephenson. It's only 1,000 pages long. You will love it. And it's not science fiction. It's a thriller. R-E-A-M-D-E. Have you read that, Jane?
No.
Have you read Neal Stephenson?
I have not. I guess I should.
Yeah, you should read. Everyone should read Neal Stephenson. Boy, oh boy, what a dummy I was. But I'm not going to let you be a dummy anymore, Carrie. You made your sister watch at least 2 hours of Ancient Aliens and countless hours of other stuff that she didn't want to watch. She's put in the work. You owe her one shot. One shot. Krista, it cannot be Moon.
Okay.
I am telling you right now, if she can't handle, for three reasons, if she can't handle the opening scenes of WALL-E, how do you think she's going to respond to Moon?
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, it's kind of the worst.
It's the same movie.
Oh my God, it is.
It's the same movie. Oh, that's what you like, but that's what your sister doesn't like.
Fine, I would choose an episode of Doctor Who then.
All right, I'm not sure it can be Doctor Who.
What do you think then? I guess I need help.
Hang on. I had a list of, yeah, no, you do need help. And luckily you have someone here who can really help you.
Okay.
And it's going to be Jane Espenson is going to tell you what to watch with your sister.
Okay.
Well,
what do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, Galaxy Quest was my first thought.
That's your first thought.
Yeah. Firefly is really good because of the Western trappings. I think that's a good way. I mean, I'm just listing shows I've worked on, but so be it.
Oh, that's right. You worked on Firefly.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed.
No, it's a good place to start.
And I love that show and it's definitely got all kinds of appeal, but you know, the history of that show, you know it better than most, but I mean, you know, if she has problems with the way Lost got resolved, you know what I mean?
Right, that it, yeah.
Well, that wasn't really the show's fault, though.
Yeah, and that was that on an episode. I mean, Firefly, yeah, didn't quite get the resolution it needed, but it wasn't a show that was about one big, ongoing, huge story that needed resolving. So
yeah, Firefly's pretty episodic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you have Serenity to sort of wrap it up.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. And the other one I'd point to is Battlestar, but not the five-hour miniseries. Come in on an episode like 33 or Water, the first two episodes that mm-hmm. followed the miniseries, which are gripping war stories. And again, with Firefly, you get the Western. With Battlestar Galactica, you get the war. You're really in a different genre.
Yeah, I think those are both really great suggestions, as is Galaxy Quest. I didn't mean to disparage Galaxy Quest. You know how I feel about it. It's a 9-star movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's well, a 99-star movie.
I think if Carrie can, you know, not get too stressed out by Battlestar, I think that would be a good place. And especially since I haven't finished the whole thing, we could watch it together.
And Doctor Who would be okay, too. I don't know why I ruled out Doctor Who. I think I just wanted to put Jane on the spot. Jane, are you a Whovian?
The reason I suggested Torchwood is the way into Doctor Who. I have not yet encompassed the entire Who oeuvre, but I adore Torchwood.
What's weird is I've been a Whovian my whole life, and I've not watched Torchwood. It's like we're in parallel dimensions, Jane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think Torchwood's very accessible because it's got a ton of humor. Stories hold together. It's got, you know, hot shenanigans.
And Captain Jack Harkness.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
What a clever dude. John Barrowman. So if there were one episode of Torchwood?
Oh, the Children of Earth 5-episode arc, which is a little standalone show. I think that anybody's going to love that. It's you know, from the halls of the British government. It's government stuff. She'll like government stuff.
Yeah, there we go.
But I would try the Children of Earth arc from Torchwood. Yep. Awesome.
All right. An alternate. And Jane, I will say to you, The Empty Child, The Doctor Dances, mm-hmm. two-parter of the Christopher Eccleston reboot is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen on television. Love it every time.
Besides Blink and the Vincent Van Gogh
Blink,
episode.
Blink, I feel, would just chase Carrie right away.
Yeah,
I mean, it's too time traveling.
Yeah, that's why I like The Empty Child and that whole arc, just because, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
It's so pretty.
What are you?
Okay, sorry.
Guys, nobody asked me, but I'd recommend that you check out the Nintendo game Base Wars, which takes baseball and puts a 24th century spin on it by replacing the players with fighting robots.
All right, so ordered. This is the sound of a gavel. Judge John Hodgman rules. That is all. You have 2 hours. 2 hours of science fiction in your diet and before you give it up forever, Carrie. Do you understand?
I do.
All right, very well. Thank you very much for being a part of this court. I'm leaving so Jesse can talk to you.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Carrie, how are you feeling about this order?
I'm feeling okay about it. I mean, you know, I think I do owe it to my sister. She's great and has put up with a lot of bad TV that I do like to watch. And I think, you know, if I can like a new thing, it would be nice to do that. So I'm on board.
What about you, Krista? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I don't want to, Carrie and I have a good relationship, so I don't want to like force her to do something that's going to make her miserable. But I don't know. I feel like it would be a good expansion of her horizons, just to introduce a new genre to her life. And so I don't have to watch Real Housewives ever again.
Krista, Carrie, thanks so much for joining us on Judge John Hodgman.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So say we all.
So say we all.
Sound Heap with John Luke Roberts is a real podcast made up of fake podcasts. Like, if you had a cupboard in your lower back, what would you keep in it?
So I'm going to say mugs.
A little yogurt and a spoon.
A small handkerchief that was given to me by my grandmother on her deathbed.
Maybe some spare honey.
I'd keep batteries in it. I'd pretend to be a toy.
If I had a cupboard in my lower back, I'd probably fill it with spines.
If you had a cupboard in your lower back, what would you keep in it? Doesn't exist. We made it up for Sound Heap with John Luke Roberts, an award-winning comedy podcast from Maximum Fun, made up of hundreds of stupid podcasts. Listen and subscribe to Sound Heap with John Luke Roberts now.
Oh my gosh, hi, it's me, Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture game show Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play a whole host of games, like one where I describe a show using limerick, and our guests have to figure out what it is. Let's do one right now. What show am I talking about? This podcast has game after game and brilliant guests who come play them. The host is named Dave. It could be your fave, so try it. Life won't be the same.
Big Business, starring Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin.
Close, but no.
Oh, is it Troubled Waters, the pop culture quiz show with all your favorite comedians?
Yes, Troubled Waters is the answer
to this question and all of my life's problems.
Now, legally, we actually can't guarantee that, but you can find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, Judge Hodgman, you're really getting in there on repairing that, what's that called?
Hover chair.
Hover chair. Oh. Floater chair is what I said.
Floater chair. Come on, Jesse.
To be fair, I said floater chair.
It's the difference between a jazzy and a rascal. Or is it a rascal and a jazzy? Oh, no. That messed up.
Well, we recorded a super long show just now, so I don't think we need to do any docket clearing, but I do want to mention one thing.
I also have to spend some time immediately looking up Livingston, the lionfish that lived in Captain Picard's ready room on Star Trek The Next Generation, to see if he's part of the Tommy Westfall universe as well. You know what, everyone, just go pull over your cars, get out your smartphones and Google Tommy Westfall universe. And then before you do that, call wherever you're going and tell them you are going to be 5 years late.
Does the narration provided by Star Trek's Leonard Nimoy mean that the Sega Saturn game Seaman is part of the Tommy Westfall universe?
Yes.
Great.
I'm going to say
great.
Yes.
Great. Hey, you know, Jane Espenson is actually going to be joining me at this conference that MaximumFun.org is planning called Make Your Thing.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that. Tell me more. Yeah.
Jane is going to be there with her husband's partner, Brad Bell, and it's basically a conference for independent creators. So, you know, whether you're a freelance writer or graphic designer, or whether you make web videos or podcasts, or you aspire to do any of those things, or you're a writer who publishes independently, we wanted to make a place for you and people like you to come together. And we have a really cool lineup of people. Besides Jane, there's Kate Beaton, who makes the comic Hark a Vagrant. The professional, independent professional wrestler, Colt Cabana. Chris Gethard from The Chris Gethard Show. Our friend Merlin Mann is going to be there. Vernon Reed from Living Color, among other music projects. John Vanderslice. We have a really cool group of folks coming to this thing, and already a bunch of cool folks like our friend Mark Frauenfelder who are coming as attendees. And we're kickstarting it. So go to makeyourthing.la, and this is the final week, so do it now. Makeyourthing.la. If we meet our goal, we're going to put on this awesome conference in this awesome place in Los Angeles. And besides being financially useful, like actually practical and functional and inspirational to people who do this kind of work, I think it's also going to be a ton of fun. So makeyourthing.la.
I mean, how after listening to the great Jane Espenson, how can you not immediately sign up for that? That's you know, she's one of my favorites.
All I can think of is if you're a chump.
And Brad Bell will be there as well. Cheeks himself.
Cheeks himself is going to be there. We're going to have Jay Allison, who's the boss of the Moth.
You don't have to tell me who Jay Allison is, man. I've been following that guy for years. Public radio legend.
He's probably the greatest public radio legend. Like if you went up to Ira Glass or Jad Abumrad or something like that and said, who's the greatest public radio legend? They would say Jay Allison. He's an amazing and inspirational guy, too.
Yeah, he is. Can I say some things about things about things?
Yeah. Where are you? Are you headed out on the road or what? What's up?
I am now booking some dates. My martini and tuna fish sandwich is over. I am going back to performing this new show that I created for over the past year and performed at the Public Theater. Now I'm taking it out on the road and I'm looking for where I'm going. Oh, yes. So I will be performing it right before Max FunCon in Los Angeles on May 29th at Largo at the Coronet, the renowned performance space. And tickets are on sale now for that. And then a little earlier in the year, I'll be performing back at the Birchmere in Alexandria, Virginia on May 15th, which this will be my third time performing. It will extend an invitation to Paul and Storm. If they can join, they will join, I hope, because this has been so much fun year over year to go to the Birchmere. It's a great performance space and one of my favorite places to perform. On April 1st, I'll be at the University of California Santa Barbara campus in dear old Campbell Hall, performing on April 1st. And I'm going backwards in time. This is like a time travel episode. On March 15th, I will not be performing I Stole Your Dad. I'll actually be in conversation with Bill Richardson, not the New Mexican politician, but rather the Canadian radio personality, in Winnipeg, Manitoba, a city that I have long wanted to visit. And believe me, Twitter is going to explode when they hear this, because the Winnipegians have been so nice to me over the years. And for more information, Jesse, one last thing.
Yes, sir.
I just got announced. I was invited to Sasquatch.
Oh, wow.
Over the July 4th weekend. And guess where I'm going to be staying?
Where?
In a yurt.
Holy moly.
I booked a yurt at Sasquatch to perform comedy there on over the July 4th weekend.
Oh, gosh.
For more on these dates and other upcoming dates in North Carolina, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Alabama, Georgia, and the meetup that's going to happen in Western Massachusetts very soon, go to johnhodgman.com or subscribe to my mailing list by going to bit.ly/hodgmail, HODGMAIL.
It's probably the best way to keep up with what cryptozoologically themed music festivals you'll be performing at.
It's true. It's true. I don't think I can do Yeti this year.
Oh, hey, what a bummer.
Yeah, no, it's just not going to work.
Will I see you at Chupacabra?
Oh, yeah, of course. And Champy up in Burlington, Vermont? Of course.
Our producer is Julia Smith. Our editor is Mark McConville. If you have a case for Judge John Hodgman, send it in. Go to MaximumFun.org/JJHo. All the instructions are right there. It's easy. MaximumFun.org/JJHo. Share it with us. You might be surprised. We might put you on the air.
We might.
It'll be fun. MaximumFun.org/JJHO.
Oh, and for everybody who submitted a name for this case and they didn't get it on, I'm sorry. Jesse came up with the name himself.
No, I didn't. I didn't come up with it.
Oh.
I picked it.
Oh.
Our special thanks this week to Eli Denovitz and Robin Fogelson.
Oh, well, I apologize, Eli and Robin. I was under the impression that you had picked a Jesse, and I was steamed about it because I had come up with my own name for it, and you said no.
No, I didn't like yours. Yours was the Star Wars chamber. I didn't even get that.
I know someone out there does, and that person is my people.
If you got it, or if you didn't get it, like Judge John Hodgman on Facebook, and you can participate the next time we're looking for a case name. And in the meantime, how about this? Review the show in iTunes. This is a great week to review the show in iTunes. Makes a big difference.
Is this iTunes Sweeps week?
It is. It is iTunes Sweeps. That's why we had Burt Reynolds on.
Oh, I was
he was
wondering.
Playing your dad, remember?
Interviewing the Muppets.
We'll talk to you next time on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
So say we all.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is a production of MaximumFun.org. Our special thanks to all of the folks who donate to support the show and all of our shows at MaximumFun.org/donate. The show is produced by Julia Smith and me, Jesse Thorne, and edited by Mark McConville. You can check out his podcast, Super Ego, in iTunes or online at GoSuperEgo.com. You can find John Hodgman online at AreasOfMyExpertise.com. If you have a case for Judge John Hodgman, go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO. If you have thoughts about the show, join the conversation on our forum at forum.MaximumFun.org and our Facebook group at Facebook.com/Judge John Hodgman. We'll see you online and next time right here on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.